So what an extraordinary week it has been from Tuesday to Tuesday, and here we are again. How fantastic is that? And it seems like most of us had a really enjoyable impromptu holiday. I'm not sure, did you get to have a bit of a rest, and or were you just busy dealing with flood and rain? Yeah, actually, it's a good opportunity for neighborly harmony as well, which is really nice. That in itself is well worth it. Yeah, so ha easy habits for happiness, class five, which is getting in depth now into our habit patterns, body, speech, and mind. And so today we're going to look at speech, communication, speech habit patterns. And this whole course is based on the Buddhist psychology. So, you just take whatever's useful. Hopefully, it's really practical. And in particular, this week, in terms of going out into the world. So, what we've already covered, first off, we looked at habits. What is a habit? And a habit is much more than just a destructive habit pattern, but it's also can be habit patterns that take us away from something beneficial. So the really obvious ones, but then also things like procrastination or doubt or exhaustion and all those cycles also rob us of contentment and happiness. We looked at how to dismantle negative habit patterns with the four R's, the purification process. Does anyone remember any of the four R's? What do we do? Just, we've done a mistake or we've got something that we want to purify. What are the four things that we've got to do? Recognize? Yeah, that's an R, but it's not quite. How do you feel when you recognize? Regret, that's right. You feel remorse or regret. It's like, oh no. And then what? What do you do to make it better? Huh? Ramification. That's why you regret, because you think, I know it's coming. That's remember the poison pizza? It's like you have the poison pizza and you're not sick yet. But you know it's coming, and you're like, oh no, I don't want to experience the results. So you have regret. And then, but how do you make it better? Think medicine.
Remedy.
Remedy, that's right. Ping. And then, no, it's not rejoicing. We've got so many R words, isn't it? It's not quite rejoicing. Now, what's the last one? It's a time frame, isn't it? No, reflect. Restraint, a time, a specific amount of time. I'm not going to do this thing for a specific amount of time. Restraint, or a stronger word for that is resolve. No matter what, I'm not gonna do that thing for a whole 24 hours. But also, in there is the what's the one beginning with R that's bigger and better than us?
And slide.
You found the slide. That's okay. Sometimes referred to as a higher power, but reverence, almost. So many R words. Kind of part of it's behind me. Reliance or refuge.
Refuge.
So refuge in something bigger or better than you that can help us, that we can take refuge in, or reliance that we can rely upon. So clearly we need some work on this, but we've got this whole secondary array of R words that we can incorporate into our practice, which are just really fantastic. So then last week we looked at we started looking at the activities of body, speech, and mind and what we can do instead. So we looked at the mind, and all that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. So that's a quote from the Buddha. And that's why we looked at the mind first. And so there were some worksheets. Did anyone have a go at the worksheets or have a chance in amongst the cyclone or napping, part of the extremes, one or the other? If you haven't had a chance to look at these, then please do just anyway. Don't make a big deal about it. They're all of the little questions. They're like conversation starters with yourself. But on the back, which is also what we'll have at the end of tonight as well, is how to do the purification blow by blow. So you can fill it in, the specific examples of each thing. Then there's a hint of what the antidotes are or the remedy. Then what you will do, who you do it for, and what you won't do in the length of time. So it's a really specific process to go through. That said, was there anything that stood out to you from last week that kind of
The actual week.
that no, like the class, not the week. If you can tie the class, the mind, how you think about things and frame the world with the week, that would be pretty good. Activities of the mind, because we looked at the covetousness of wanting things, the maliciousness, and confusion or wrong views, distorted views. So, is there anything that stood out to you? Oh, you like the bumper stickers? Oh, great. Oh, good, 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 good. Yes. It can be very helpful, especially when things are really intense or go wrong. I sometimes feel those bumper stickers are like little life rafts to hold on to. Just, it's all your mind can get is just a one-liner. So we've got more bumper stickers this week. Do we? Oh, we've got some. To not react or retaliate for 24 hours. If you can do it for 24 hours, that's brilliant, because you would have definitely worn off the heat of the moment and been able to be way more constructive. What do you say when you drop something and it smashes?
How interesting. I said it. I dropped
Fantastic. So yes, you can say how interesting, or you can say, of course, instead of oh no, you go, of course. So tonight, think before you speak. So this is a wonderful acronym that we will get into, but how to speak, because even though everything comes from the mind, it's the mind that is the driver, and it's yeah the driver and the motivator. In a way, what happens in our mind is quite private, and it's quite lucky actually because sometimes when we've been doing retreats and it's a really difficult retreat, some of the days are in silence and everyone's so happy that we're in silence, because otherwise we'd all just be complaining or something like that. So we can be quite private, and in a way it's very hard to, how well do we actually know people? How well do we know what people are thinking or feeling? Our actions, how we act in the world, again, we're mostly just physical with close friends. The way that we communicate with most of the world, the way that we actually make a connection with the world, is through our speech. That's how we communicate with everybody. And it's the main way that we interact and connect and create relationships. It's crucial for creating harmony. It's the main way that that all of the negativities get propagated, isn't it? With all of the what do you call it? The fake news and the divisive kind of algorithms online. So mostly it's through speaking. So that's something really worth taking a lot of time to hone it so that it helps us. And not only that, but there's a line between, or a kind of a gray area between our thoughts and feelings, the mind, and speech, communicating, which is the inner self-talk. What goes through our mind all the time, that inner dialogue, and that has a huge effect on us as well. So, what we're going to have a look at, what speech patterns do we have that cause us or others distress, that harm ourselves or others, or are unskillful? But not just the negative side, what communication traits do you enjoy? So can you think of anyone that communicates in a way that you really like? Can be a real person or in a movie or anything. How would we like to communicate? When there's a narrative or a story, yes, 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 yes. Yeah, so Geshe Zopa does that all the time. He's always got a story, and it's like this one time in band camp. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche as well, everyone would think he was just telling stories, but actually everything was in the story. It's a communication thing, yeah. Yeah, so a good listener, so that instead of the one person says this and the other one says, oh, well, I did the same thing too, and so then it's like matching one for one, but actually listening and asking questions. Or, oh, it's an empathy thing. It's not a one-upmanship thing. Yes, okay, so that's a big difference. Does it go back to them or is it an inclusive empathy thing? So we can see right now it's tricky. And the same things can be said, and we can have a completely different reading of it. So let's just set our motivation then, with all this in mind. So straightening the spine, imagining a fine thread of light running from the base of your spine up through your body, out through the crown of your head, just being gently pulled upwards. Every time you breathe in, feel your posture becoming kind of a little more straight and extended. And then every time you breathe out, release any tension from the neck and the shoulders. And then bring your focus inwards, just becoming aware of the rising and falling of the breath. And as you're breathing, just in your mind, just note breathing in, breathing out. And in that way, let all the other thoughts and distractions just settle. And if you do get distracted, if you notice that you've become distracted from the breath, just notice and name. Notice what it was that distracted you, a thought, a feeling, a memory, a sound, whatever it was, just notice what it is, name it, and then continue just breathing in and breathing out. If you find your mind is very busy, it's probably because there's a lot of inner dialogue going on. So even with that, without getting involved in the story, just notice it without judging it as good or bad, without feeling guilty, without getting interested in it. Just notice it's happening and come back to breathing in and breathing out. Or if your mind is a bit dull and sluggish and there's nothing going on at all, then just have that little bit of alertness or awareness to be saying, breathing in and breathing out, and that way keeping your focus on the breath with your mind feeling awake and alert. And as we have a feeling of spaciousness opening up, then we can set our motivation for tonight, thinking how, of course, we wish to benefit, and in particular, how to be able to use our speech wisely and powerfully so it can help ourselves and others. It has such an effect, and so we can really harness the power of our speech. So it can eventually become enlightened speech. So with this altruistic intention, then you can gently bring your focus back to the room. And we can dive right in. So we've been going through the non-virtuous actions, the things to avoid. And in terms of communicational speech, there are four that are the worst. Lying, of course, which we all kind of realize is it's a pretty big deal. Divisive talk, harsh words, and gossip or meaningless speech. So lying, you know, pretty much universally, none of us like to be lied to, and we feel bad when we're lied to, betrayed. Divisive talk, creating disharmony, you're talking behind people's backs. Harsh words, where especially like with yelling, you know, if you hear the neighbours having an argument, like it's almost like a physical thing, you cringe. So that just the harshness of it. And then gossip or meaningless talk, which doesn't seem that bad, but can end up being destructive or just a huge waste of time. So they're the worst ones. And when we talk about speech, it means physically talking, but it can also mean through gesture or omission. So if you keep quiet when someone said a mistruth and you keep quiet, it's almost like you're condoning it. So, you know, there are grey areas there. And how, of course, how we communicate with others as well as our inner self-talk. So that's on the negative side of things. Then this wonderful acronym, THINK, think before you speak. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? This is so helpful, this acronym. Actually, what the Buddha said is it true? Is it necessary or helpful? Is it, and is it kind? So at the minimum, those things, those three. So often when we think about speech, we just focus on being true, but true is, it's not enough, because if you say the truth and it comes out really harsh, it doesn't land well. People don't want to hear it. Or you might say the truth and you might say it nicely, but if you don't then have something to go with it, what do I do next? Then people just get stuck. So we have to have all three: true, helpful, and kind. I mean, nothing is truer than this than, say, when you first come to a Dharma center, you expect everyone to be nice, isn't it? and occasionally you might go to a Dharma center and people are having an argument, and that's really shocking. If it's in a Dharma center, it's just like, what's happening here? So one class, when Eddie taught this, and I think we were doing a weekend retreat, and so we went through all the different ways of how before we speak, we think, true, helpful, kind, whatever, and then straight after that we had a tea break. And then it was the quietest tea break. No one said anything because not necessarily didn't have all the things. Maybe wasn't helpful, or maybe wasn't inspiring, or it was just like someone just sat there smiling at each other. Yes. But in terms of like if there are difficulties resolving disputes and things, I've always just thought just try and be as honest as possible, but it's not enough. It's got to be kind, and it's got to be something that you can action. It's got to be useful. All right. So any questions so far? Questions, comments, make sense? You're going to be able to remember this one, the four R's. Okay, we've got the 14 R's now. But what about think before you speak? Divisive talk manipulation, no, is more, I would think, is more on the lying side of things, because your manipulation includes gaslighting and being deceitful with your speech. Yeah.
Makes sense to me. You're not telling the whole truth.
Yeah. Yes, and you're not being honest with how what you're saying. You're saying you've got the hidden agenda, so that to me would come under not outright lying, but yeah, deceitfulness. So these are just these 10 non-virtuous actions are the four of communication. These are just the main ones, but there's many others that like offshoots, like family trees that come out. But we won't go through all of that because then it'd just be too depressing. Anyway, so to avoid lying, so what's lying? Misleading others through speech, gesture, or omission. And many of us might just tell white lies, little white lies. And I've found, because I've gone through stages of my life where I've compulsively like little white lied. And I've found that it's just to save face. It's just through a pride thing. And occasionally people might say, oh, I'm late because the traffic was terrible. But, you know, it's just because you're late because you slept in. But then you just say it's because the traffic's terrible. So you might say, think, oh, that's just so I don't hurt their feelings. But a lot of it is just to save face. So you might think there's nothing wrong with little white lies, but they did do a study with lying in corporate culture, and they found that even with little white lies, and this was in the stockbrokers, if little white lies become acceptable, then it normalizes it. So then slowly, slowly it escalates, and that's what happened with all of the GFC, the great financial crisis, with all of the housing bubble crash and everything like that, all of the fraud that happened came because the lying just became more and more normalized until people were doing these outrageous things, and it's like lobsters cooking in a pot, you know. So that's the scary thing about little white lies, is it just makes it normal, and we don't want it, and it will naturally escalate without us even being aware of it. There are some really funny examples about lying. Does anyone ever watch Border Force or Border Security? And everyone lies about, do you have any food? No. And then they open up, what's this? Is like bacon or something. And it's like, oh, I didn't know it was food. So this is, yeah, I mean, so why do we do that? We want to get away with something. We're trying to save face. Oh, my mum packed my bag. It's not me. I didn't put it in there. My mum. Like a 57-year-old guy and is saying, oh, my mum packed my bag. It's her fault. All of these things, it just gets more and more embarrassing. And then you might find that you have to lie saying your job. You might have to tell some untruths. That can be really difficult when that happens, or have to cover for someone. The biggest lie, though, is to be a religious charlatan or a quack doctor. That's counted from a Buddhist point of view as the worst kind of lie, to lie about your own spiritual realizations or insights, because that's the most dangerous. If I say, hey, trust me, I'm a guru, and I actually aren't, and I don't have the insight, I'm not a safe person to trust. So that's where we get all sorts of, you know, cults and kind of new age disasters and things like that. So the big lie, lying about religion or health. Yeah. Okay, so the results, if we lie, even with little white lies, when we normalize lying, the results for us is that people don't believe us. Even when we're speaking the truth, it weakens our own speech. or they just, they don't take you seriously. Or we find that others cheat us a lot, or we're surrounded by fear. You know, we're paranoid. We can't trust anyone. So psychologically, that's the result of lying. So if we want to be free of that, the incentive for us is then to just be really careful with our speech. So to abandon deception, exaggeration, misinformation, and white lies. So we might not lie at all. We might be quite honest and truthful, but we can still become clearer with our speech in terms of exaggeration. Because if we say things like, oh, you always do that, or you never do that, that's, it's not a lie, but it's not a truth either. So if we try and become more specific, it'll strengthen our speech. There are other things where people say, sometimes on the telly, they'll say, I'm not a racist, but blah, blah, blah. Or when they're giving those half-assed apologies and they'll say, oh, if I offended anybody, I'm sorry. And I'm just like, why are you saying sorry if you didn't offend someone? You're saying sorry. It's like, to anyone that I offended, I'm really sorry. We can tighten it up to make it honest and authentic. So what do we practice instead? Focus on telling the truth, but not just the truth, but a truth that will benefit others. And so that's necessary and kind as well. So not just truth, the benefit. And that's what I found with Geshe Zopa. Whenever he started talking about the more scary topics like death or impermanence or something like that, or if he's talking about various disturbing emotions, the more horrible the thing that he's talking about, the more jokes he would crack, the more gentle his speech would become, the more friendly, really kind, so that it lands nicely. So this thought of, oh, cold, harsh truth, tell someone a few truths, when's that ever worked? If we manage to focus on telling the truth kindly and helpfully, huge benefit. People will naturally have a sense of trust in you, which is great because then it means we can all relax. So questions, comments about this one, about lying or about anything?
When something's complicated and you simplify it until
you feel it's not exactly the truth, but is it, it's like, but is it in the spirit of the truth?
Yeah.
It's necessary and kind in that you've simplified it because otherwise people can't understand it. And so then the truth, is it tending to the truth or away from the truth? Now if that's complicated, you could be in murky waters.
Yeah.
So that is tending towards the truth, not away from the truth. I mean, it's like if someone's really distressed and you say to them, it's okay, everything's going to be okay, we'll fix this. And in your mind, you're going, oh, man, you're stuffed. But so it's not necessarily a lie either, because you can be thinking, what's the pathway through this to help this person for everything to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then again, when you say you get a medical diagnosis or something, you want to be told the truth. And so you want the doctor to tell you the truth. And I remember as a kid, doctors didn't tell the wife what was wrong with her. When you went to the doctors, you went as a family and the doctor told the husband. And it was up to the husband whether he told the wife or not if she had cancer. This is like living memory, folks. How's this even possible? So if someone asks, I want the truth, then you pretty much should tell them the truth. And people will often think, you know, kids might want the truth and the parents won't say the truth. But you find that pathway through according to their questions. So whatever the kid asks, then you answer. But don't add on anything else yet. But yeah, with work, it can be really tricky. And it comes down to if you what your motivation is. So if your motivation is to benefit and to tend towards the truth, you may have to tell something that appears like a lie. There's this story of when these hunters were chasing a deer in the forest and the deer ran past the Buddha, and the hunters came along and said, "Where did the deer go?" And the Buddha went that way. So, yep, it's a lie. So what happens is that the bigger benefit trumps the smaller harm. So telling a lie, it does weaken our speech, and you know it because you're even feeling ambivalent about it. But if the bigger picture is to benefit and the motivation is to benefit, it'll work out. There's a cost, but it'll work out. So the rare people in the world that manage to navigate through telling the truth and being dead set honest and also being kind and in complicated situations, like, they're really remarkable, and we honor that because it is so tricky. But for ourselves, it's the motivation. We just got to be honest about our motivation. So yes, it's tricky. And in work, I've had a few people where they've had to lie for others at work and face the necessity of, say, being a whistleblower, and that's really heavy. It's really heavy when that happens, because often you're stuffed if you do and you're stuffed if you don't. Either way, it's pretty terrible outcome. So how to navigate our way through the motivation to benefit. And if we have that motivation to benefit, then people will naturally trust us, even if you've had to simplify things or, you know, go the windy way through the truth, they'll still feel that you're safe. Good question. Okay, everyone take a photo. Okay, next one. Harsh words. Oh, no, divisive talk. So divisive talk, talking behind people's back, slander or excessive criticism. So I've had to be very careful with this in my life because I've got such a loud voice that even when I think I'm talking quietly, the whole room can hear me. So I just, whenever I'm talking, I just think whoever I'm talking about or whatever group of people I'm talking about, even if they're not in front of me, they're standing right behind me. And that's just been from a very small child. And it's worked really well. So I'll never say anything that I wouldn't say to somebody's face. Or talk about a group of people without thinking there's one of those people in this room. And I think that's a really good rule of thumb. The slander, of course, well, that's obviously a divisive thing to do. But excessive criticism as well, so it's criticism tending towards bagging somebody rather than tending towards helping them. So we can tell when we're just mouthing off about someone or when we've got some really necessary feedback or constructive criticism. Divisive talk can also be those terms of phrase like, oh, the youth these days, or, oh, women drivers. They're kind of phrases that we're familiar with. They harm, they're divisive, they're not true, they just perpetrate stereotypes. Venerable Rabin has often said, we say those things, it's because they're so juicy, then we're attracted to it. We're attracted to that kind of thing. Divisive talk. The results for us, if we engage in divisive talk, we ourselves cannot find friends. We find that people are often accusing us, wrongly accusing us, and we find lots of disharmony at work. So it's the immediate psychological result of divisive talk. And I've found that too, that people who will go blah, blah, blah into my ear about people,
are very distrustful of everybody. And it's really sad to see. It's like their own mindset, their own bubble that they're in of not quite paranoia, but just everybody out to get them. And you can see how people create that for themselves. That's right. So to get someone on your side by disparaging somebody else. So that means you'll never feel safe together because it's not based on mutual harmony or accord. You're going to have to continue bagging somebody else. But also, what about if you're someone like me who's just for the underdog and the freaks and the people that can't get it together and like, they're my people, man. So you're going to be bagging those people. It's not going to work. I'm going to go, well, they sound interesting. So there's another how interesting for you. I'm like, yeah, I can hear all sorts of criticism about people. I'm like, yeah, I get it. So.
Excuse me, Mickey.
Oh, yes.
Hello. Naomi has asked, so she which sort of links in with what you're talking about there. She says, at uni and at parties, I often hear friends slandering or singling out certain people. I try not to take a side, but is there anything else I can do to try and diffuse the situation? Is that coming up in the rest of the slide?
I wonder if it's coming up. So I think, I mean, the especially at uni and at parties, when you have conversations like that, it just shows how insecure everybody is. That the easy protocol to feel good about yourself is to make sure someone else feels worse. So you could probably go one of either way. There's a fork in the road. One, you can go to humor and just really make it extreme and ridiculous to show how absurd it is, or over here, what to practice, encourage harmony and give compliments. So if we understand that people bag others because they themselves are feeling insecure, then instead of them bagging that person or finding them kind of a distrustful person to be with, try and find a way to compliment them so they actually start feeling okay about themselves, and maybe that insecurity will dissolve. So if someone's bagging everybody else at uni, try and find a good quality about them, how they're good at studies or what they're good at, and then that might free them from this compulsive criticism of others and start looking, oh, I do have qualities actually. And at least that'll keep you entertained because you're going to be there like, what's a good thing about this person? There's got to be something. What to abandon is all the stereotypes and the habitual criticism. So maybe the other thing is when people are overly critical, if you start saying, and what's something we can do about it, they'll very, very quickly get bored talking to you and they won't bother you anymore. So you'll be free of it. The benefit of creating harmony, of actively creating harmony, which is by really trying to recognize people's qualities and then give them a compliment about it, is that you'll never lack friends and you'll naturally attract others. So that's this thing. We all want to have friends. We all want people to like us. It's not even something we have to think about, is it? It's just there. Even if we go, I can live my life without any friends, we feel lonely. It's a natural thing. So the way to get friends is really so simple. Just avoid the divisive talk and give compliments, not in, oh, you look fantastic, but with the qualities that people possess. So you speak to their best self. And in a way, this is what the lamas do, why people feel so good when they're in the room with Geshe Zopa or Geshe Sherab who's coming, is because when the lamas teach, they teach to our best selves. They don't teach to all of our negativities. They're teaching to all of you wonderful people
striving to be good, sincere human beings with all these incredible qualities. And you may not even notice it yourself, but you just start feeling good in their presence. Okay, so next, harsh words. Well, this is the really obvious one. Harsh words, threatening communication, swearing, yelling, sarcasm, and, you know, those teenage grunts where you go, hi, how are you? What did you do today? Nothing. Do you want to go out? No. So it's not the same as yelling, but it's hurtful. With swearing, that one's circumstantial, isn't it? Because you can swear like a trooper with your mates, and it can be, I mean, there's swear like a pirate day on library thing. There's all sorts of creative, there's an app, how to swear like Shakespeare. It's fantastic. I can never remember it though, but Pearlie does. So, you know, before I came to Library Tumper Centre, all of my friends were rabid musicians and they just swore like pirates and like Shakespeare all the time. It was just a game. And I would be in stitches laughing. And then I came to Library Tumper Centre and then I realised what a filthy mouth I have. And it was so hard to. And so in a way I got really scared and I was really quiet for the first year because I didn't trust what I'd be talking and everyone just be looking at me horrified like, what? Oh, it's the swearing. So now I'm a real prude. So now when I see my friends that swear like troopers, I'm so shocked. I really notice it. So it's circumstantial, that one. Swearing at Dharma Centre is really different from swearing down the pub with your mates. But yelling in an argument, we all know how horrible that feels. No one likes it. And then there are like whole national things of harsh words. You remember the booing of Adam Goods? You remember that? When, you know, that great footballer and he's there and it was whatever the national football, not it's not a race, is it a game? And the whole crowd booed. Like how? And it's because a few people do it, then everybody else, it's easier for everybody else to pile on in. It's like it's a national shame that it happened and that anyone could withstand something like that. So that can be enough for people to end their lives when that happens, just through just speech, just words, harsh words. So the results of if we ourselves have harsh speech, that we find that everyone around us, we often hear distressing sounds or words, that it's a really harsh environment that we find ourselves in. Everybody's yelling or aggressive with their speech. As a personality trait, we easily take offence and other people easily take offence at us. We have abusive companions and many arguments. From a Buddhist point of view, these kind of things can also be results from past lives. So if we've been really kind and gentle our whole life and yet we find ourselves surrounded by distressing sounds, people take offence at whatever we say even when we didn't mean it, we've got abusive companions, that can be like a karmic echo from past lives. But definitely we can see it happening psychologically in one lifetime. So I kind of took heart at this because for a while when we were in Newmarket, there was a hostel next to us and there was occasionally for like 3 or 4 months there'd be someone like really going through a hard time and they'd just be super abusive the whole time, yelling and everything. And so I just think, okay, that's just a karmic result and don't take it personally and don't get angry back. And certainly don't mirror it back because that's what we do. Someone yells at us, what's our first thing that we do? I mean, there's a range, isn't there? But What do? Do you hide away or do you yell back? If we're in New York, we'd yell back. What do we do in Brisbane? Give him the finger and walk away. It's a very gesture. Oh, that's a good one. Okay, so as people get more and more heated, you slow your speech down. Yes, because it stops it escalating. Yes, fantastic. And I'm probably that would work with kids too. Because that's the thing that I've noticed with kids, they're running around, you go, well, yeah, kids, shut up, and you end up yelling. So you get their attention, but then you go, hey, kids, talking quietly. And it even works with animals too. So there is a instinctual urge to mirror harsh words just to throw them back. But I really like that to slow things down, take the edge off it. So what to abandon? Abandon using words that cause distress. Simple as that. Whatever it is that's going to distress others, we don't have to do that. Which in my case means it's a real work in progress because my particular thing is to, I've been told, is to be a bit blunt. I'm just trying to be clear. My whole thing is just to try and be helpful and clear, but it can come out a bit blunt, apparently. So I'm not sure how I feel about that, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I do know, okay, I've got to temper it with trying to be kind as well. So what to practice instead? Speech that causes pleasure or gentle words. And this was the main thing that struck me with the llamas before I even started the whole philosophical discussion with everything was these were human beings. They were guys that were gentle and wise. And I just thought that was amazing. That was the thing. That was my starting point. And then I started listening to what they were saying. And then they encouraged me to have rip-roaring debates as well, with great friendliness and gusto and humor and the whole lot. But the bottom line was there was no harsh words and there was no being judgmental. And the benefit, people will speak well of you and you will have a good reputation. Any curly questions there about this one? Harsh words? Yeah, so we probably noticed, when we're getting tired or exhausted, so a lot of intensity at work, preparing for the cyclone, everyone's lost their minds, basically. You've got to deal with them. So then, when you yourself slip and things don't come out as well, that's interesting that then you find yourself being tired and a bit discombobulated.
Yeah, just didn't help.
Didn't, well, I found often the offhanded thing that I will say, if I ever do say it, which is very rare, it's always at exactly the wrong time to exactly the wrong person. So then it's like, no, not do it. And then I've also found how hurt I get from other people's offhanded comments like that, because it's just like a casual hit. And so it just it makes both parties tired. And then the other one, gossip. Okay, so what is it? Idle chatter, meaningless talk, nagging, telling tales. So this one can be things like I remember last year when I went on pilgrimage with Geshe Zopa. So there was a group of us, and there was one person I've never talked about food so much in my life. Oh, for crying out loud, it just drove me insane. And not only was it like, would they talk about the food when we're eating the food, but then once we finished the food, then they'd say, and what are you going to eat tomorrow? I'm like, no. So I was thinking today, when we next go on with this pilgrimage in June, I'm just going to have a rule. Anyone sits next to me, I'm just going to say to them, I'm not talking about the food and you can't make me. It's a real fine line, isn't it? Because, oh my gosh, if you're on pilgrimage together and you're sharing a room and one's talkative and the other's not, that's a killer. And so to stop, you're really good that you just had it as part of your inner journey. I would just be thinking, no, can't. So what I've managed to do with that is to just be really clear with people and say, I need to think about something now. I can't talk for half an
Yeah.
hour.
At least we had global silence, so
Oh
we
yeah, so
had
yes.
no.
Yeah, so in pilgrimage can and in retreats too can be really good like that. So one retreat we did, they had noble silence, no speaking while eating, which was a real mistake because that was the one time that everyone came together and would kind of debrief about the meditation. So we missed out on that. But again, yeah, that's right. On pilgrimage, when you're going to these sites, you want to be talking about the great meditators that were there or about the Dharma. And so then Geshe Zopa was really skillful because he must have just heard the pitch going up a bit, and then he'd say, "Okay, everybody sing mantras." And that was very skillful. So yeah, it can really take over your own personal space, and if you need that personal space to not speak at all, people feel that you're rejecting them, especially a talkative person. So then it's worth kind of saying, this is what I'm doing. I just need to think about this or wear a thing, I'm in silence, or find some other person that doesn't talk to just be your silent companion. So that's what I did on the pilgrimage. I just found the person that didn't like speaking. I said, you can sit with me on the bus. And we just sat there in blissful silence for hours. It was so good. And then the rest of the time, when you're with the chatty person, you think, obviously, just what you did, I'm going to give you my attention without resentment. But a lot of people also don't know how to stop talking, and they need, just like people don't know how to leave a party, like they need help.
Yeah,
So
you
I've been the kind of person that doesn't know how to stop talking and doesn't know how to leave a party. And finally, when someone said, Miffy, it's time to go home now, oh, really? I didn't realize. That's all I needed to know. So now I'm not shy to say to people, it's time to go home now. So really what hurts isn't being told to go home, it's that resentment that people sense underneath. That's the killer. So you've got to get to it before then. So what happens if we do any of this gossip or meaningless talk is that our speech becomes weak, people don't listen to us anymore. They just bleem off.
You know,
Yeah, so
we're
how can you tell, is
alive.
it gossip or not?
Is
Yes.
that how this conversation?
That's it. So that's the exact key that you said. So when we are not aware of our purpose for speaking or for telling a story, then it will naturally snowball into talking for half an hour about someone just for the heck of it to fill in the time. So the main thing is to set your purpose beforehand.
Have an intention.
Have an
Like,
intention.
why
Yeah.
you want to share it?
So
Yes.
you share, to give an example, we can have funny examples and embarrassing examples. But you can also talk about the food or the weather if in your mind beforehand you set your intention. So this is a lot what we do with neighbors. We don't want to talk about anything about politics or religion with our neighbors, you know, just in case we're never ever going to agree. So we just talk about a safe thing like the cyclone or whatever. But in your mind, it's a lot more than that. In your mind, you're thinking, I'm going to chat about this boring old topic because I want neighborly harmony. So that's what stops you just rabbiting on and things degenerating. Is having that intention. So again, just like what Chad was saying, how do we even know if we're just telling a story or if it's gossip? It comes down to what's our motivation, what's our purpose. And And would we say it the same way if the person was there? Would we say the same thing to them? Would we talk to them about it one day? Like I would, I'd talk to that lady one day when
oh,
you
I
when
thought,
yeah,
she knows,
yeah,
she
yeah, yeah.
People like this.
And it's really funny because the monks or the nuns will say the same thing. They'll go, oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
But,
and I've heard lots of the monks gossiping too. So, you know, it's just that there's the whole joy of seeing each other again when you haven't for a long time. And so the short word for it is gossip, but actually it's meaningless talk. So meaningless talk doesn't mean that you just always talk about the deep and meaningful things. It's that you have a meaning for speaking. So Eddie, when he goes to parties, Eddie who leads Discovering Buddhism, the in-depth classes here, if he ever goes to a party, he doesn't do gossip, he doesn't do meaningless talk. He just talks about like death and impermanence and emptiness the whole time. So if you want to have a good time at a party, just and there's always somebody there that will actually be the person that does want to talk about death and impermanence. And they will find Eddie and they will be there for the whole 4 hours of the party. You can imagine Eddie at a party, that's right. So, and also what else he's done is I've got to, because I don't actually go to parties anymore. I can't handle just, it's all too much now. But I've got a call from someone who's had a dinner party because, of course, dinner parties, half the time everyone talk about food and that just drives me so insane. I just won't go. Because you can't say, hi, thanks for inviting me to your dinner party. You're not allowed to talk about food. And the host of the dinner party has rung me up and said, Eddie's disappeared. I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, he was there 1 minute and then he's gone. I'm like, oh, he'll show up. And then round about dessert time, Eddie'll show up again and not say anything. And then he'll come home and I'll say, what happened? And he said, oh, I got bored, so I left. It was more fun just to go for walks. So I went for a walk, I looked at the neighbourhood and la, 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 and then I came back and they had dessert. There you go. So that's how Eddie avoids gossip. You could always leave. What I do, like on the bus stop, when there's a real chatty person, I will happily say, it's been great talking to you. Now I really have to think about this important thing. And they're so stunned. They just don't say another word. So it's great. I'm going to see ya when the bus comes. Okay, so abandon, this is the one, compulsively filling in silence. So this is what happens with chatty people, that they don't know how to feel comfortable in silence. A lot of it is just wanting to share. So if they want to share, give them something to do, to share, to be useful, to continue with that. But a lot of it is this being in silence and then having to fill it because you can't bear the sound in your own mind. And that's what's so good about a Dharma center, that you can come to a Dharma center and sit here in silence and it's okay. It's not weird. Abandon nagging or that competitive thing of always having to have the last word, speaking to dominate others. What to practice instead, know your purpose and have the courage to speak about meaningful topics. So this is another thing that happens, that so many times family dinners, Christmas time, whatever, and everyone just talks about the food and the weather and doesn't talk about any of the family stuff or the family issues or even the family history. And then people get old and then next Christmas someone's died. They're not there anymore and now you can't ask them all those stories. All those stories died with them. So a lot of these important things we just put off because we don't know how to get the conversation started, or everything's a taboo topic because everyone's going to have an argument about it. So we just end up spending a vast amount of time with people that say we know and love, with no meaningful conversation. It's such a waste. Yeah, so isn't that weird? Is that that people don't want an authentic conversation? Or... See, I suppose, yeah, because I cut to the chase too. And so very quickly, either the person walks off or we have a really good conversation. Either way, I'm really happy about that. I think it's more difficult if you work and you've got the whole water cooler thing, or how to, you've got to be really clear of your purpose then while you're speaking. Otherwise, it can degenerate. So there are ways around this where you can have a meaningful conversation that's not too personal with people. So things like if you have to go to a dinner or you've got to go meet family or whatever it is, there are ways that you can establish that human connection without it being too personal. One of them can be what's your favorite movie that you've seen and why. And people will share a lot about themselves without it being too personal. Or you can ask them, I mean, in the olden days, you could say, what's your favorite book? but you can also say, what's the most surprising thing that's happened? What's a surprising thing that's happened recently? In Buddhist circles, what I found is if people start talking about this or that or their pets, and they start showing pictures of their pets, to just take a Dharma lens to it of how we can help our pets from a Buddhist point of view. So to take, or politics, when you talk about politics, let's look at it from a karmic point of view. So you're not totally shutting the conversation down, but when we're in a Dharma circle, it's good to be able to actually use that. It's our resource to talk about this. So put the Dharma lens on. What's the Dharma lens? How do we look at Donald Trump from a Dharma lens? So that way you won't have any arguments and you won't end up just hating. the benefit, people will listen to you and value what you say. That's the big thing. So even if you're just at work and you just have all those innocuous conversations, if you've got this purpose in your mind to work harmoniously with your workmates, then what you say, people will listen to you and value it. Even if it's just like, we've got to go on break now because later on, blah, 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 people will listen and pay attention. Or another way of saying that is if you keep on saying things and no one pays any attention, that's like the leftover echo of gossip and meaningless speech. Your speech has been weakened. Right. So they're the four biggies, and we've got things that we can do about all of them. There are also, actually, Tina, if you want to hand this out now, because I'm pretty sure these unhelpful speech patterns are on page 2. So we've got a whole stack of them. This is from a book called The Happiness Handbook, Dr. Timothy Sharp. And I just threw these in here because I think we can relate to all of them. Overgeneralization is when we say that, you know, I'll never do that, or they never do this, or you never do that. So this one with the overgeneralization, this was one of the tells for my friend on pilgrimage. I can tell when she was getting really stressed. Because whatever I did, she'd go, oh, Miffy, you always do that. And I'm like, no, I don't always do that. But she's getting really tight and I better start looking after her now because we're in the middle of an airport. She's like, Miffy, you always do that. So that kind of overgeneralization, it's a tell. If we notice ourselves doing that, red flag. Time to really relax, look within what's actually going on here. The filtering, concentrating on just the negatives and ignoring anything else. So that's almost when we take things personally. Like on Facebook, you notice all the thumbs down, but the thumbs up's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The all or nothing thinking. This is when stress becomes really manifest. We have a tendency to think in black and white. And for instance, things like, oh, I won't be able to get this all done today, so I may as well not start. Personalizing things, taking things personally. Someone is in a bad mood and you think it's your fault. So this is like you can see it's a speech pattern shows actually it's the evidence of a mental pattern that's happening. And we notice it when we start putting it into words, either internal dialogue or in our speech. And it's good to notice all of these because personalizing things, taking things personal, can become really destructive when, for instance, if someone close to you commits suicide and you think it's your fault. Or like kids when their parents divorce and they think it's their fault. Catastrophizing, which is often something that we late at night, when we can't go to sleep, we start catastrophizing about everything, but always looks better in the morning. Mind reading, assuming someone's acting in a particular way, therefore they feel in a particular way. So I get caught out with this all the time that people mind read me because I'm autistic. I act really differently from how I feel. And so people think I'm feeling in a particular way, and it's so totally opposite. So I notice this a lot. People do this a lot. Make assumptions. Emotional reasoning. This is really interesting. So things like, I feel ugly, therefore I am ugly. Or I feel hopeless, therefore everything is hopeless. So it's taking how you feel and thinking that everything it tells you is true. So it's how you feel. You might feel completely hopeless, but it doesn't therefore mean there is no hope for anything. And fortune telling, I'll always be like this, I'll never be able to change. And magnifying or minimizing things. One that I didn't put in here was a red flag to look out for is should statements. So if you ever find yourself saying they should know better, or it shouldn't have happened like this, or it should be like that, that's another red flag. So what do you think we're doing when we say those should things? Projecting? Yeah, what are we projecting? Yeah, we're projecting. So we're projecting things like, our expectations, and we're projecting perfection, for instance. It should work. I paid all this money, it should work. So we're expecting perfection where there is none, or we're expecting permanence or stability where there is none. So in a way, those should statements let us know that we're out of step with reality. So again, if you find yourself saying that anywhere where you say the word should, little red flag comes up and investigate that sentence. These unhelpful speech patterns are great when you catch yourself doing it. So don't get judgmental about it, because how do we know where even all of these mistaken, distorted ways of thinking and feeling, we don't even know we have them until we start verbalizing them. So yeah, this one in the worksheet, I went through all those. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I've done all of them. I recognize every single one of those at one stage or another. So the inner self-talk, we're probably very familiar with all of the destructive self-talk, the internal commentary, the critical, judgmental way we speak to ourselves, how we dwell on the negative. If people heard how nasty we are to ourselves, like how many people, I don't know about you guys, but that inner self-talk It's so nasty. You'd never speak to anybody else like that. You just wouldn't put anybody else through it. But in your own mind, you're going, rrr, rrr, rrr. So awful, so mean, and not helpful, not true, and not kind. So that internal commentary, and often when you sit down to meditate, you become aware of it. Or when you're sitting quietly, looking at a view or whatever, and then your whole mind gets distracted by it, you become aware and you think, oh, I can't do this, or I can't meditate, or whatever. It's just because you're becoming aware of it. The more we use negative self-talk, the more we perpetuate unhappiness. So Venerable Robina often says to speak it out, or to write it down, to catch yourself so that it doesn't just continue going around and around. So pay attention to the words, but don't believe the words. It's important that we do catch what they're saying, because they can be so extreme, how critical and judgmental we are about ourselves, that if you actually wrote it down, then you'd be really shocked. Because so many people, their internal dialogue is, you'll never amount to anything. It's often all the words that were said to them when they were little, often really silly things like being called fatso or being called stupid. And you're not stupid. And who cares if you're fat? But all of those things, so then it becomes this internal dialogue. So if you catch yourself doing it, that's a really good to do that. Pay attention. Don't believe what they say. Okay, so what to do instead? Positive inner self-talk. So this also comes from that Dr. Timothy Sharp, the Happiness Handbook, using open, kind, fluid language. And it's all the ambiguous language. I could, he possibly, it might, they sometimes. So instead of you always do this, it's like you sometimes. Another really nice way to reboot your inner self-talk, what would the Dalai Lama say? Changes everything, doesn't it? Doesn't that say something about our inner self-talk? Would you say that in front of the Dalai Lama? What would the Dalai Lama say about you or the situation? It's just my go-to every time. And how would your best friend describe the situation? It's probably quite different from how you are. So one way that we can help ourselves make our speech strong is going from general to specific. So instead of the youth these days, young people, blah, 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 which every generation has said to their shame, try and be really particular about place, time, person, and activity. So being really specific and nailing down a specific instance. So instead of the youth these days, it could be those young people that I saw at the supermarket last week when I was really tired and it was rush hour, and this is what they said. So now you've actually got a much clearer picture of what's going on, and there's room for a positive outcome because you can understand what happened. So there's a couple of examples. Instead of saying, oh, nobody understands me, say, oh, Bill didn't understand me this morning. I mean, I look at this, I think it's so clear, but, oh, everything's terrible today. I woke up feeling bad this morning. So we're getting clearer, we're getting closer to the truth by being specific. And the same thing goes for when you give compliments. Instead of going, oh, you look really nice, if you put some effort in, go, I love how your hair does this and that colour suits you. And then they're like, oh, I mean, especially coming from an artistic background, you go to a play and someone's put on a gig or something, the worst thing that anyone can hear is, oh, it was really good. Like, they don't want to hear that. They want to hear why it was good. And they certainly don't want to hear why it was bad till later on. So you just find the really good things to say and be really clear and specific about it. And that's always going to be helpful. People will be happy. Here's another one also with reframing. So the passive voice, has anyone heard about the passive voice? It's the one, here's an example that I use, say, here at Langri Tampa Centre. This is a passive voice. It is recommended that you take your shoes off when entering. So it's just a small example, but the passive voice is that one that they use on forms and official documents. That makes your eyes cross over and you can't focus on what they're saying. It's called the passive voice. We all know and hate it. So, do you know why it's so terrible? Why we loathe it so much? Why our eyes cross over? Chad's laughing. Do you know
I think you are
Yeah.
well, correct.
So the thing with this is why it's called the passive voice is there's no person in there. There's no one in this sentence that you can relate to. It is recommended. Who? Who's recommended it? To who? Well, to me, but it's like there's nothing to grasp onto in that conversation. And I call it the public service voice, but it's actually legal documents for a very clear reason. They don't want anybody in there to be blamed. It's not me, it's recommended. There's nobody in here to get in trouble or blame. Thank you very much. I've just wiggled out of it. So, a different way to say it is please leave your shoes in the racks. Or even we ask, leave your shoes in the racks. Suddenly it's like, oh, okay. So I've learned now to not take it personally. If my eyes start crossing over with something, I'm like, oh, I bet it's the passive voice. I bet there's no person in that sentence. And sure enough, that's why. And then it's like, well, that's your fault. I can't concentrate on that sentence. You have to reframe it. Here's another one that happens in the news. 34 women died from domestic violence. Again, what the passive voice? It's like there's no person in there. There's no action in there. So here's a way to say it. 34 men killed their wives this year. Now, that's actually, I mean, Australia has such a huge amount of domestic violence, and various news agencies have tried to change this. That even how it's reported, you stop saying 35 women died from domestic violence to actually what happened? They were killed by their partner. So then suddenly it's, these men killed their wives. Now there's a tragedy in there. There's a story you can relate to. There's human beings that matter. Both sides like are tormented in just different ways. And you get the full import of it. But that's also why the news is so just like, washes over us and we can't grasp it because it's written in this faux objective voice. And it means we can't relate. And here's a Buddhist one to reframe and reflect a wider reality. So instead of I'm so depressed, I am a budding Buddha. Undergoing depression. So there it is. Our words, it just our words make the world. We reframe our reality. Okay, we're going to go over. I want to do one last, our little meditation to end. So we can have a go at becoming a budding Buddha. Let's do our final meditation. Take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. We've talked a lot about speech and thought about how we communicate with others and our inner self-talk. So you would have identified by now some of the destructive speech habits that you have. And let's think we're going to do something to purify them. Again, imagine that you're in your room, it's miraculously tidy, exactly how you like it. You feel in your happy place. And you're going to invite the Buddha or an enlightened being into your room to help you. A pure source that you can rely on, a valid refuge. So you think that the Buddha there appears in your room, golden, magnificent, and smiling at you and accepting you exactly as you are. And ask the Buddha to help you. What are the speech patterns that you have that you'd like to stop? Recognize how they harm you and others. And have the courage to feel real remorse. And the Buddha hears you and cares about you. You can also think that your own wisdom, your innate nature, also hears you and knows what to do. So white light comes from the Buddha's heart or your pure source. This white light flows across space and washes down through your crown, through your whole body, your whole being, and purifies all of your negativities and washes away all the destructive speech patterns. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaya Swaha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaya Swaha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaya Swaha. Feel your whole body clean and clear. Your mind completely relieved of negativity, open, spacious, and relaxed. And in this spaciousness in front of the Buddha, think about the remedy, what you can do that will counterbalance the negativity. So a positive way of communicating how you'd like to speak, who you'd like to speak like, how to speak like the Dalai Lama or a really good friend. Characteristics of your speech that you'd like to develop to be able to really benefit others. And so then this time, golden light flows from the Buddha and across space and fills up your clean, clear body, like filling up a glass with nectar. And the essence of this golden light is enlightened speech, all the pure energy of perfect communication, and it absorbs into you. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaya Swaha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaya Swaha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaya Swaha. So you feel completely energized, filled with the essence of enlightened speech. Your speech becomes powerful and beneficial. You've absorbed all of the good qualities to be able to communicate like this really beneficially, spontaneously, and kindly to others. And then in front of the Buddha, I make a promise to refrain from the destructive speech patterns for a particular amount of time. So whether it's just an hour or a day or at a particular event that you know is coming up, make this promise and feel it's really personal. You're personally promising to the Buddha. And he's very pleased with your efforts. And then the Buddha gradually begins to grow smaller and brighter, come across space to hover just above the crown of your head, and then melt down through your crown and come to the rest at the level of your heart. And feel that as you go out into the world, you'll be guided by this Buddha light at your heart. And dedicate all of your efforts, including coming along tonight, to being able to speak like the Buddha. Our main method of connecting with others may only be beneficial and never harm. And then you can open your eyes if they're closed. And yes, we've covered a lot. The four biggies: lying, harsh words, divisive talk, and gossip. Think before you speak, and how our inner talk frames our world. And next week, last week, there's homework. There's the easy questions. There's the filling in the speech thing. Give it a go. It's much easier to do this speech one than the mind. Just do it over your cornflakes in the morning. And next week is the last week, and it's on physical actions, the body.